Albert Kozyu Fok Contact in 1920. Report from his book The Shocking Truth or also UFO Contact from Planet Norka as WS published later. Albert Ko was as a teenager on a trip to the mountains of Canada. It was June 1920. They were to drift down the river in a canoe. Sometimes they had to carry the canoe by falls. One late evening Albert heard a far cry for help, while his friend was further down looking up the coming way. In a narrow cleft, gap, was a young man fallen, fatally hurt, and not able to come out by himself. But Albert was then able to bring him out. He was clothed in a peculiar, silver-gray, tight jumper-type garment, almost like silk. A small instrument panel was under the chest. He said he was not canoeing, but had a plane nearby, and was fishing, but his equipment was really odd, likewise his tale that he had a plane nearby. He was fatally injured or hurt, but was reluctant letting Albert see his plane. But at last he had to let him help him to his plane, as he could hardly walk by his own. But only if he agreed not to tell any of what he would then see. He had expected to see a conv. graft, but no. A round silver disc on three legs was there. It stood 4-5 feet from the ground. No windows, so Albert wondered how he could see out navigating and steering. It was an episode lasting not much more than an hour, that may have carried me thousands years into the future, and yet left an uneasy feeling of witnessing something that didn't actually exist, an impression of disconnected sequences only found in dreams. He was very upset of what he had seen, and some later his travel mate came back, but Albert said nothing of what had happened, as he had promised. Next day they went on down the river. Some 3 months later he got an invitation through a letter, to come to the lobby of Hotel McAlpine at 12:30 next Saturday. There they met again, but his outlook was now somewhat different. He means Albert had a lot of questions, but did not bring them forth this time, cause he felt he, the stranger, avoided this talk on his plane and life else. Beside a Christmas greeting, he didn't hear any more from his strange friend until April. He then came by car, and they drove to Lake Mahopac. There he told him, "You probably already have inkling that I am a stranger to your modern world. This decision of explanation is a personal responsibility. _ Our mission here will forever be cloaked in the tightest secrecy. _ If the events that we foresee do not come to pass, our presence here will not become known. The great depth of gratitude that I feel toward you, coupled with the things that you have seen and know exist, has influenced a violation of an inhibited law of disclosure." He also told of the events leading up to the first meeting. That he was one in a group of men who had come here to observe our scientific advance. In Earth reality he was a student majoring, equals main subject, in electronics. He had taken advantage of the vacation time period to rejoin some of his own people, who operated one of their established bases off planet, and in the personal utilization of the little craft, could enjoy the wonderful fishing of the otherwise inaccessible rivers and lakes of Canada. On leaving the base, he had told his buddies not to worry if they did not hear from him for a week, as long as the clear tone signal emitted from the ship. His age. The tremendous difference of age is going to startle you. In Earth's time standard, I am exactly 304 years older than you. This reversal to youth was a vital requirement in establishing our identity as Earthlings, for the foundation block in the fulfillment of our mission here, depend upon being accepted by your various races, as their own. Albert then wonders. It seemed incomprehensible that anyone of such great age, could act as boyish as he, display the enthusiasm in little things, that most youngsters only enjoy, but his amazing trait was the unlimited source of knowledge, the easy manner in which he found expression and simple explanation of what I knew must be deeply involved mathematical problems, so that I may form a reasonable opinion of the strange and unfamiliar facets of our world. He went on to say more how the panel on his chest had been smashed in the fall into the cleft, so that it could not send emergency call back to the base automatic. So if Albert had not been led to where he was, he would have died there, he said. Book speaks much of how these surveillance things happen, and had all worked, help would have arrived in 3 to 4 hours. Bjort controls this craft, even to an unmanned flight back to its base. This was the first operational failure we ever have experienced with this type control. Then he commented on the war that just had gone over Europe. WW1, remember this was in the early 20th. Another meeting was set up as the anniversary of their first meeting there in the wilderness in Canada. They met at Palisades Boat Club, where he had his canoe. Our meetings were so rare and far between that I would have cancelled a date, even with my best girl. After supper, we stretched out in front of the campfire and Zrit said, "Tonight I am going to take you on an imaginary journey in a Norka ship that will carry us to 0000 years back in time, and far into the great void of space, some 20 million, million miles from our solar system, to a planet, once called Norka that orbits the star you know as Dowsity, and in related story, from the archives of our history, we will relive an incredible saga, of a very ancient and highly advanced race of beings, my ancestors who dwelled on this planet. Before embarking on this visionary journey, a few explanations would be in order to enable a clearer definition, a better understanding of conditions that existed in creating the whys and wherefores of their unfolding story, as our great ship would have approached their solar system, 20,000 years ago. Some of the further stuff may sound a little too technical for someone. You'll recall our last discussion and my mention of the universal nucleus, its pulsation and effect on all solar systems in a general locale, on the spiral arms or perimeters of a galaxy, as they reach a direct line proximity of high noon on our mythical galactic clock, causing land and climate inversion, major glaciations periods, etc. To be more specific, the nucleus is a tremendous vehicle of motion, comprising pure energy and atoms. 0. A tremendous energy outpouring, gives birth to the electron and the proton, at its face and as they are bent into the magnetic lines of force, surrounding the nucleus, their mating creates the hydrogen atoms, foundation blocks of all matter for through a fusion by synthesis, the primal suns are formulated, then suns and planets in the eventual grouping of galaxies. In this action of synthesis and the suns of the galaxies they form, will be found the only heat in the universe. The great ice ages occur in this closer proximity to the nucleus, because a spiral arm is pulled out to its farthest extreme from the bulk of the galaxy, and the average sun is not hot enough to completely offset this direct impact of its icy breath. He tells in more detail on how these ice ages occur because of the variation of the sun's heating as the sun system rotates inside the galaxy in an enormous cycle. The talk also confirms that the axis, poles have changed many times through the time of the planet's past. Apostrophe. These major glaciations periods occur on all water-bearing planets, that are close enough to heat of their suns, to at least maintain a partial liquid state, in the water content of their lakes, rivers and seas under temperate conditions, and brings into stark reality, just one of the adversities that establishes a limbo of extinction to many plant and animal orders. As I mentioned pref. They appear in a pro. 223 million years spans, regulated by one revolution of the galaxy, and their duration also fluctuates, from just over a million years, to over 6 million years in some past incidences. If you were amazed at my little ship, standing in the wilderness, I cannot conceive what your emotions would have been as you gazed at a veritable circular mountain of gleaming metal, 32,000 feet in diameter, with its central dome as tall as the Woolworth Building, for this was the Norka ship of advanced design, and none being near Earth, at that period. We will skip across the void of time and distance, to join its crew in their control complex, as they are heading home from an expedited flight, that will terminate in about a year and a half. I have chosen this ship and its particular position, in becoming imaginary members of her complement, so that you may gain a broader comprehension of the vast stretches of emptiness surrounding even a single sun, and give added credence to a statement, that I have previously made, regarding all the matter in the universe, representing less than 1% of its whole, as in traveling to this solar system, I will portray in words, the impression of observation, through which you will also see some of the creative wonders, born of the human brain, and the phenomena in nature. We now find ourselves seated in the nerve center of this great ship, and before strolling about to peer over the shoulders of the various engineers, in their routine check of its operational functions, we'll explain a few of the panels, screens, meters and dials that comprise a major part of this control area. The large panel ahead, with the streaks of light and zigzagging lines crossing its surface, is the receiving core for all information gathered by the impulse grids and scanners, whose electronic fingers constantly probe the reaches of the cosmos, and this data is transported and evaluated by the internal mechanism of this panel, feeding to appropriate instruments of reception. Through the series of 50 panels to the left, that appear to have a pale milky glass in their frames, various electron intensities materialize in visual pattern, and the 40 frames on the right, with slightly smoky-looking faces, relay light rays in color and conformity of their original emission, just as though you were watching a motion picture in true hues of nature. The banks of dials, meters, etc., that stretch along the lower part of the wall, number 1500 in all, and record in electronic blocks or units calculated from vibrational frequency of a specific atom, and those that we examine, I will translate into the standard tables of time, velocity and round figures used by your particular country on Earth. With this general acclimation, we will join the engineers to determine our exact location and distance from Tau City, the speed of our ship, expected time of arrival at this destination, and how these factors are established. If you will look at the left second panel from the bottom, you will see on its milky face, a large prominent black dot and obliquely encircling it, in odd spacing, seven lesser dots. That panel is one of the visual indicator screens of the ship, synchronized guidance system, and the dots are electromagnetic impressions of Tau City and its seven planets. The dial that we are now approaching calculates the energy formulating the dots on the screen at this moment, was emitted by the sun, Tau City, 4 months ago, and the meter above it registers the energy's velocity at 160,000 miles per second, confirming our present location as to miles from its source. As you glance to the right, this dial records the decreasing time that it takes the energy, leaving Tau City to create the dots on the screen, and in the 10 seconds that we have been watching, its meter records this span has decreased by 380.000 miles, establishing the speed of our ship at 38,000 miles per second, or just fraction over 1 to 5 the light speed. The meter below shows that at this constant velocity, our objective will be reached in a round figures of 19 months plus 3 weeks. If our ship were headed toward Earth, traveling at this tremendous speed, it would take about 60 years to make the trip. I believe in this time, velocity ratio you recognize the incredible distances that separate the suns, and to are relatively close, in galactic dimension. And now we will move over to view the screens on the right, that are receiving light rays and more understandable than the electronic impressions of this group, for you will be able to see the sun, gas clouds, constellations, etc., on which their scanners are focused. The first one I will point out is the frame, on the upper right tier, that resembles the picture of a black velvet with some of its pile rubbed the wrong way. The blackness that appears as velvet is a minute part of void of space, within our own galaxy, and would take the ship 10,000 years to reach the vicinity of the faintly luminous streaks of bluish haze, that is actually a gigantic cloud of ionized gas and cosmic dust, stretching for millions of miles in formative stage, that will eventually compress and generate sufficient heat energy to evolve into a new sun. On the screen, at the end of the middle row, you will observe a circular tilted disc, that has the aspects of a pinwheel rolling along on edge, just ready to fall over. This is another spiral galaxy, closest to our own system in distance and the realm of possibility. A trip to its fringes would take us almost 7 million years, and the space in between is empty, except for the primal energy of electrons and protons. In analyzing its structure, you will note its brilliant center or core, slightly resembling the yolk of a fried egg, sunny side up, comprising billions of its very hot primal suns, and the dark streaks and holes in this area, are caused by sun explosion and gas venting that occurs at intervals throughout its lifetime. 3 mL of bright globules, that fan out concentrically, are suns and planets that form its massive curving arms, and only on some planets of the suns that comprise these arms will you find life materialization compatible to our own. I could only reply that I had lived each moment with a definite pattern of the universe starting to formulate in my mind, and regretted that time flies so swiftly, for I was really not tired. But he reminded me that another day, and as we sleep, our great ship will continue her journey, just as she will eternally fly, in thought and the annals of racial history, the forerunner of a fleet that someday blaze a path across the void, as they sought a new home, new hope in the unknown surroundings of a strange solar system, and through the unfathomable mechanics of destiny, was to be the only ship to survive this fateful flight. In rejoining our ship, for the promised tour of inspection, you will enter a strange, but fascinating miniature world of a simulated planet, and although not in exact image, the brain of man has created all but one cardinal requisite that maintains the flow of life in a customary environment of its origin. His genius has improved on nature, in breaking the natural planetary restrictions of dependency on a sun in fixed orbit, as we now cruise for beyond its influence and through navigational instrumentation, may return at will. But nature, in turn, has placed a restriction on man in a limitation of distance that he may travel, and still survive, for throughout his scientific research and invention, has not devised a means to artificially produce, in any great quantity, the vital ingredient of existence, water. He has, however, extended the duration of survival, in this type ship with full complement, to several decades, through a reconstituting method of gases, chemical and water, but ultimately must depend on a water-bearing planet for replenishment of supply. Let us return to the familiar control room, and by walking through the opening, opposite the panel's wall, emerge in the corridor of a circular complex, 480 feet in diameter. The exact center and magnetic wall, through which we have just entered, is a transparent partition, 400 feet in diameter, housing its heart of energy cells, which generate all electronic impulse, magnetic fields, grav fields, stabilization, velocity potential, etc. If you will look through this enclosure. At this point I asked if this partition was made of glass? No, he said it had the clarity of glass, but its durability and strength is a 1000 times that of steel. The drive there you can imagine a massive highly polished needle, 50 feet in die and length exactly 7 times the thickness, that is set in semi-gyroscopic mounting, but unlike a gyroscope's free-running pivotal axis, its frame is centrally fixed in conjunction with a track that encircles the enclosure. This needle is spinning in synchronization with the ship's revolving perimeter edge, creating various magnetic fields and major forces of its operational performance. For instance, the rate of spin in its present vertical position governs the ship's velocity, and slight wobble that may be noticed occasionally is due to its stabilizing influence. If the needle was positioned on a transverse plane, an inversion of polarity will hold the ship motionless, and an induction or regulated displacement of electrons, while in this plane, would enable the ship to vertically rise or descend the velocity in either direction, again controlled by the needle's rate of spin. I know this must sound like Greek to you now, but as we study the higher mathematics of the universe, understanding will clarify its entire motivation by electronic energy, formation of electromagnetic fields of like and opposite polarities, and through a compression of these magnetic fields, an energy conversion of tremendous proportion takes place. In applying this principle of energy conversion to many of his everyday needs, man also advances his lot in life. If, in the future, you may have the opportunity to observe one of our ships coming in for landing or takeoff, you will notice a conspicuous little flutter characteristics in all, whether large or small, for our present ships are still patterned in the same principle as a Norka ship. Regardless of angle, we may approach a landing site, a momentary pause is required to touch down vertically, and of course the initial phase of ascent, a vertical lift. The positional shift of the needle, that I have described, from vertical to a horizontal plane or vice versa, causes this characteristic little flutter motion of the ship during this operation, and I believe this explanation will clearly away a bit of your mystery of how my little ship flies. I remembered the flutter as his ship momentarily paused, and the legs folded into recesses of its bottom, after rising about 30 feet above ground, on the first morning of our meeting. About how he was fishing, I watched him deftly manipulate his rod, in slow easy motion maneuvering the fish to the canoe's side, then reach into the water and release it with a few words of advice. Maybe this will instill a little caution, for next time you may not be as lucky. Somehow these incidents still seem to touch on the unreal, an ageless man, with the universe at his fingertips, deriving so much pleasure in the simplicity of playing with a fish, and yet just as happy watching it dart away, free again and alive. The sequence of fact and flowing word, blending into a dreamlike structure. I can still see myself one short year ago picking away over log and rock. The muffled cry in the wilderness, a little deed of compassion, a pledge, and like Aladdin rubbing his lamp, a new world opens. An unknown race of people, apparently on some secret mission, that comes under the heading of mercy, without thought of glory or compassion, only because their philosophy teaches an encompassing love, not solely to the being of man, but for the blade of grass, an insect, the water and trees. The very limited route in my mind, for the fantastic pasteurizations, anchor on fact. A flying suit and its panel, explain a dying man's initial adamant refusal for aid. The fluttering and disappearance of an unearthly little ship, that I had touched, watched, described by its mechanism, the sun, stars and planets are real. Perhaps the boundless wonders that are starting to unfold, as true compression widens, may even define the question he never actually answered and the elusive heaven that man eternally seeks, to be revealed in the wisdom of knowledge. Further on the cosmic journey in far past on next part.